Go ahead. Yeah.
They're not staying for the first piece. Is there anybody left? The attorney in this case? So is there anybody left?
So I guess all those people weren't interested in this FERC case, huh?
What a great surprise.
Now we find out who really loves just the law.
Right.
3 minutes for rebuttal, please. I'll have a lot to respond to. Good morning, and may it please the court. It is black letter law that auctions create contracts. That's the reason they exist. This principle is several centuries older than the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, the Federal Power Act, or even the Republic. But in order to escape its ancient nemesis, the Mobile Sierra Doctrine, FERC needs to find some way of unmaking auction results as contracts. So they try a number of different tacks. The first tack we see in the remand order, and then repeated a little bit in the rehearing order, is to describe them as unconventional auctions.
Before you get into that,
yes, Your Honor.
Your theory is that, as I understand your position, is that FERC was wrong, right, that these are contracts and that it had to apply Mobile Sierra, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, that's
okay.
Correct, and
so
it's armored here by writing.
Maybe you could explain why you have standing. I mean, FERC, the result is what you want, Mobile Sierra, correct?
The result is what we want.
So what's the injury? What could we possibly do to redress your injury?
The injury that we have is still ongoing, Your Honor.
Which is what?
The result that we have now is that FERC has decided that we only have a Mobile Sierra protection so long as FERC, in its mercy, decides to continue to allow us to have it.
Well, then maybe someday you'll have a case that raises this issue again and you'll be injured, but you're not injured in this case.
No, Your Honor, we're in fact injured today and now. This creates immediate uncertainty.
But tell me why.
Because it is, recall that the-
You're injured by their reasoning, correct?
Not simply by their reasoning, although that is in no way helpful to anyone in the supplier side of the energy industry, Your Honor. We are injured because we all participate in a market where lending is accomplished based on risk.
Yeah.
And the amount of uncertainty that what FERC has done here, and in subsequent orders to the remand order in particular, what they have done here has created real, present, concrete, particularized uncertainty about what it is that we really have. We thought we had a writing. We thought that writing gave us Mobile Sierra protection after 45 days. We want to go out and get money so that we can build new plants. The lenders want to find out just how certain they can be that the auction results are really going to provide a guaranteed revenue stream that's going to allow us to build 3 years out, and it makes the cost of capital significant. And there's another very important injury, which is present and ongoing. Order 741, which plays a role in this case because it resulted in the changing of the tariff, deals with the need to specify precisely who a contract counterparty is in order to allow bankruptcies, which have been numerous as a result of tanking prices in the capacity market, most recently Boston Generating Company, to figure out who it is they have a contract with. So saying that someone does not have a contract, they just have a tariff rate, has ramifications on what happens by way of bankruptcy relief. And that is going on now. It's not something that requires a future case in order to present.
But in the settlement agreement, don't you have Mobile Sierra protection? I mean, don't you have
Your Honor.
A piece of paper that shows
yes, Your Honor.
We've got it?
Indeed, Judge Griffith. We have a writing. The writing says, and it's not simply a Mobile Sierra provision, it's a very particular Memphis clause. We will accept bargain. This is a bargain for agreement. You get a 45-day period of just and reasonable review. After that, we need our Mobile Sierra protection because we have to go to the banks. So you get your 45 days. If something is incredibly wrong with the auction results, you can fix it. As a matter of fact, this court has already had a case decided under the just and reasonable standard. The PSEG Energy Resources case decided December 23rd of last year, which was decided based on the just and reasonable challenge that was filed within the initial 45-day period. I know that case pretty well because I was the attorney in it.
I want to just go back to your point about contract rights. I mean, the auction produces enforceable rights, doesn't it?
Well, yes, Your Honor.
What's not, I don't understand what isn't, what you're lacking here. The auction produced enforceable contractual rights.
Yes, Your Honor. The auction exists right. to produce enforceable so then, contractual rights.
So then, again, where's the harm?
Where's the harm?
Yeah.
The harm is in the standard review that will be applied in the event that someone challenges the auction results. And it has not at all been unheard of that
but
the
you,
auction
you want mobile SEER. That's what you want applied, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor. That's well, what then, we want implied, and we don't want FERC to be.
So then, what kind of opinion would we write that would redress? What could we do to redress your injury? Let's assume we agreed with you about mobile SEER. Wouldn't that be the end of it? How would that solve your problem?
Your Honor, if you say that they are contract rates, then FERC doesn't have any discretion about whether or not it can yank that protection later on. That is of manifest help.
But once again, if they yank the protection later on, can't you challenge it then? Since you just agreed that all
certainly.
Rights are completely enforceable
we would be able to
under the auction, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Certainly okay. we would be able to challenge it later on. And if you crafted an opinion that was expressly designed to say, we find that there is no standing here, raise this in some future case, and if we were got that golden get-out-of-jail-free ticket against you know, future challenges,
you
that would
you suggested, helpful. Or maybe you didn't suggest, but said that it's the present state of the law is affecting investors?
Absolutely, Your Honor. It is affecting the world as we speak now. I'm sorry.
Do we have any evidence of that?
Not in this record because there wasn't really a vehicle to bring it forward. I could point you.
Well, there is. You always all parties have to show standing, right? Yeah. And you do have a section in your brief on standing.
Yes, we do, right. And it talks about the arguments that I just brought up. I think it is telling that FERC didn't have any concerns with our standing. I think they realize very well, and I realize, of course, that the court can bring this question up sua sponte, but it is certainly the view of the industry, which is why we are still fighting this case, that there is a important reason to continue to get certainty about what it is that we have. We have a writing that says that we are entitled to a certain specific heightened standard review, the Mobile SEER standard. FERC is now saying, well, you only have that because you have it based on our particular pleasure at the time. We do not really want to live in a Louis
XIV. Well, no, that's not exactly what they said. They said you have it because the auction produced contract rights, which although it wasn't the kind of contract, bilateral contract that that automatically requires Mobile SEER, the commission ruled that because it functioned that way, mobile SEER is appropriate.
I think, Your Honor, might be more accurate to say that what FERC said is that it has discretion to do it because of all the public policy considerations that they would like to create stability based on this particular agreement. If you look, for example,
but they also said that the auction functions in many of the same, the market forces that are operating here are very much like the forces that operate in a bilateral contract and justify the lower mobile SEER standard. I mean, it wasn't just policy. They looked at the market and at the functioning of the auction and said, right, didn't they?
Those things are correct, Your Honor. But it doesn't change the fact that what FERC is using this case as a vehicle to do is destroy the mobile SEER doctrine. And they're doing it by creating a new nomenclature never before heard of that juxtaposes contract rates, which is a real term, against what they are now calling tariff rates. And ever since the remand order issued in this case, they have been using it as the anchor around which to build a body of precedent set forth, at least insofar as it existed at the time as the petitioner's brief was filed, under which anything which touches, I'm sorry, how is it phrased? The specific wording is on page 21 of our brief. Anything that relates to a tariff or the service provided thereunder is now described as a tariff rate. We do need the help of this court in telling FERC that they do not have the option to decide that they are going to lower the standard of review later. This is not a case, Your Honor, their acrobatic approach to this case has been repeated again and again and again. They had one position in MPUC-1. They sought rehearing when we lost in rehearing. I'm sorry, when rehearing was denied, We were their allies headed up to the Supreme Court. They changed their position then. Suddenly, on remand, before Judge Silberman, they conceded that these things are not contract rates. Hardly a helpful concession on our part, the real parties in interest, that they've decided they're not going to defend their own orders anymore. And it's why the last argument that we presented in our brief is that, look, you have walked away without explanation from what you held before. We thought we had a writing. You've now destabilized that. Boston Gen has gone bankrupt. No one knows who's supposed to pay for what. Is there, in fact, an enforceable contract? This is really, truly causing problems in the real world. And if you would like to take judicial notice of the fact, I've mentioned Boston Gen a couple of times. Boston Gen was supposed to be an intervener with us in the PSEG Energy Resources case. They dropped that as an intervener because they disappeared as a commercial entity in between the filing of the case and the opportunity to file a brief. The capacity prices in New England have been tanking year after year after year after year, and it is causing very significant problems. The need to be able to resolve those problems, given the certainty that what we're dealing with is a contract, is critical. Describing it as some sort of tariff rate is not helpful, because that means FERC can, in a specific dispute that might arise into this, say, you know, we don't think that it relates to the entire tariff or the entire market. We think this is something that relates to the entire tariff or the entire market in a way that we didn't really mean to cover. And therefore, in your specific situation, we don't think that this is a right we're going to give you. Repeatedly, since the remand order came out, FERC has been rejecting uncontested settlement agreements on the ground that they somehow relate to the provision of services under the tariff, and therefore they are a tariff rate, not a contract rate. I don't think it's a secret that it's something that this court has observed in, let's see, City of Richmond, Laclede, Justice Scalia observed it in Morgan Stanley. The Mobile Sierra Doctrine is a carbuncle on FERC's hide. They want it gone, and if they can use this newly created juxtaposition as a way to kill it, then here we are. This is the case where it needs to be decided. If not, there's going to be a lot of manifest harm that's going to continue. And yes, Your Honor, it is harming things today.
That sounded like a ladies and gentlemen of the jury speech.
Well, I didn't intend it to be. We've spent a lot of time now talking about standing. There were several other things that I wanted to talk about, but I'm looking at a...
You can take... We used up your time on standing. Why don't you take 2 more minutes?
All right.
Well, tell us the most important thing you want us to hear about the merits, okay?
The two most important things about why FERC is wrong about these things not creating contracts.
Okay.
First, their notion is that there is somehow... That one side of the market somehow does not participate in the auction. That is also, beside being untrue, which I'll get to in just a moment, is also true of every kind of auction. Whether you're dealing with an English auction or you're dealing with a Dutch auction, one side of the market's not actively participating. The action is taking place between one side of the market and the auctioneer. So that's not a distinguishing feature. It is also not true here because in the particular context of this market, you have net buyers and sellers. They participate as self-supplied bids. They put in demand bids. There's another case before you that will soon be argued, also called NEPCA v. FERC in 12-1060, that is entirely about buyer-side market power in the auctions. There's order number 745 also before this court, which is about demand response and its effect on these matters. So the idea that there's not active participation in the market is simply wrong, because you have mixed buyers and sellers. And then second, their second fallback rule is, the results are unilaterally determined under the tariff. And their reason for that is, because we have rules. That is, again, true of every kind of auction that there is. It is, in fact, a fundamental feature of auctions that they proceed according to a known set of rules before the fact that provides the certainty necessary to create contracts. So their two foundations for their case simply fail as a matter of common sense and just what we observe in the real world, as well as the law. I suppose, also particularly alarmed that the one question that we have asked them to address from the outset of this case is to say who we have a contract with. We have a contract with someone. We gave them a choice. It's either with the purchasers through ISO New England as agent, which is exactly what the tariff says, something which FERC has yet to acknowledge, even on brief at this point, or under the new tariff, it expressly says that ISO New England is the central contract counterparty in order to remove the very uncertainty that I said was the basis for standing in this case. There is simply no way to describe these as something other than contracts, and to hold otherwise will cause substantial harm to the New England Power Generators Association members going forward. given the fact that I'm significantly over time.
Yeah, why don't you? All right. We'll give you another minute or two for your rebuttal.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
John Wright on behalf of the state petitioners. We have 10 minutes. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal time. As you know, there are two kinds of rates that utilities can charge their customers. The tariff rates, which are rates of general applicability. There's no consent. They're offered to all participants in the market. There's contract rates, which are charged to particular customers who agree to them. Under the Federal Power Act, both rates must be just and reasonable. And the Mobile Sierra Doctrine draws a very bright line distinction between what is a contract rate and a tariff rate. Mobile Sierra obviously applies a much stricter standard of review to the review of contract rates and an ordinary just and reasonable standard of review provided under the Federal Power Act is provided to tariff rates. This touchstone of the presumption is the consent of the parties, the agreement of the parties to accept a certain rate. The doctrine was created by the Supreme Court, not by the FERC, not by lesser courts, by the Supreme Court 55 years ago. It's been revisited twice in the past 5 years, including the predecessor to this case here. The Supreme Court remanded this issue to the D.C. Circuit for two particular issues. One is whether the federal auction capacity auction rates are tariff rates or contract rates subject to the Mobile Sierra provision, recognizing there's a distinction between tariff and auction rates. Tariff and contract, and if not, does FERC have the discretion to apply a practically insurmountable standard of review to tariff rates because it believes it is just and reasonable to do so in the overall scheme? For the reasons I'll specifically provide later, the tariff rates, the auction rates or tariff rates, not at all subject to the Mobile Sierra presumption, and FERC has no discretion to apply the Mobile Sierra presumption to tariff rates or to erect any rebuttable presumptions to the ordinary, just, and reasonable. As to the first question, it's clear the results are tariff. FERC agrees, and we support that. They're tariff rates, and they share none of the hallmarks of contract rates. And despite the generator petitioner's assertions to the contrary, first of all, as opposed to all individually negotiated contracts, tariff rates apply to all the market participants. That's precisely what this tariff rate does here. It applies to everybody that will be purchasing load and capacity in New England. Single auction clearing price, that price is available to everybody. Just as important, the auction shares none of the attributes of consent that is so important to the touchdown of the Mobile Sierra presumption of reasonableness. The buyers do not participate in the auction in any meaningful sense. The generator petitioners tried to specify several areas where they would be able to self-supply. That's a very philosophical level of participating in an auction. They're not present. The auction results are generated through an iterative process, and they must pay those rates directly through load. There's devoid of any negotiation. Negotiation is what the Supreme Court specifically said is what makes it a reasonable rate. There's no privity of contract. There's no agreement. The amount of the product, the capacity, that is determined by the ISO New England.
Go back to just sort of the framework within which we're supposed to look at this. Supreme Court, the courts have said that, you know, just and reasonable is ambiguous, correct? It's not easily defined. And yes. Mobile Sierra is just, you know, one way of measuring that, right?
Yes.
So where does, explain to me why the commission doesn't have the discretion to do what it did here.
That will be the second part of my argument, yeah. And I'm happy to go right into that. We understand that these are not contract rates. FERC has the ability and extensive discretion to treat all of these issues. The issues that
your argument was that these are not contract rates.
They are not.
And that, therefore, Mobile Sierra can't apply, right?
That is correct.
Okay. If we don't agree with you about that, do you argue the next step in your brief?
I'm sorry, if you do not agree with me.
In other words, if we don't agree with you about that, that is that the commission has flexibility to apply Mobile Sierra outside of the bilateral contact situation, Do you argue that their doing so here was an abuse of discretion?
Yes.
You do? Where?
Because FERC does not have the discretion to apply something that...
Right. That's my point. That's your argument.
Yes.
That they're... You're making a legal argument, right? That no contracts, no mobile Sierra, correct?
Yes.
That's your argument.
Yes.
I didn't see the next step in case we disagree with you about that.
In other words, if we think these are contract rates,
then
does that somehow constrain FERC?
If these are in fact contract rates, then that would upend
Mobile Sierra, right? In other words, if we disagree about the front end of that, you lose at the back end, correct? Because it would be appropriate for them to apply this higher standard.
If these were in fact contract rates, then Mobile Sierra would apply.
Okay, so your argument really depends on finding that they are not.
That would be the first step, yes.
Do you engage the second step?
The second step is assuming that...
I asked you whether you do in your brief address the second step. That's what both Judge Brown and I think are asking.
Whether
we understand your argument about the first step. We got that.
That they are not tariff.
Yeah.
Okay. Since
so that they're not contract rates.
They are not contract rates. Yeah. They are tariff rates.
That's your main argument.
No, our main argument, we believe that that is a given, that these are not tariff rates, that these are not contract rates, that it's a single clearing price. There is no counterparty. There is nothing about these. Look, a tariff rate also provides binding obligations. I think the fact that an auction rate does create some sort of binding obligations between buyer and seller is confusing because tariff rates create binding obligations between buyer and seller. A tariff is, after all, an offer to sell a product.
Maybe I'm a little confused, but you're saying these are not contract rates, therefore it's inappropriate for FERC to apply Sierra Mobile, right?
Therefore, the Mobile Sierra Doctrine does not apply of its own accord. The second step of this argument, part two, is because they are not contract rates and Mobile Sierra does not apply of its own accord, then does FERC have the discretion to apply it? And my argument is that no, FERC does not have the discretion to apply it as well, because that would upend 55 years of Mobile Sierra precedent.
Okay. Go ahead, sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yes, the tariffs themselves provide binding obligations on both sides. A tariff is, in fact, at the end of the day, only an offer to sell a product at a price certain, which a purchaser can accept by purchasing the product. There is an offer and there is an acceptance, okay? And that does not, and that does have the hallmarks, some hallmarks of a contract. But if that simple act of offer and acceptance created a contract, within the context of Mobile Sierra, all of the discussion with Mobile Sierra that there was a distinction between the tariff and a contract would be meaningless. Mobile Sierra, the Morgan Stanley case specifically speaks of whether there is a tariff rate or a contract rate. The public interest presumption only applies to contracts, but a tariff rate, too, has a set of reciprocal binding obligations once a customer has accepted the rate. Simply accepting a tariff rate does not transform that rate into a contract rate, even if you can say that binding obligations have been incurred on both parties once it's happened. And the same is true for a reverse auction. You have produced a tariff rate. It remains a tariff rate despite the fact that the purchasers will buy it later and are forced to buy it under the ISO tariff rules. It simply is a tariff. The second point I'd like to get into is whether FERC has the discretion, assuming it is not a contract and it is a tariff, to apply it in the overall scheme that is just and reasonable to do so. And I would like to take a moment just to examine what I think is a radical departure of 55 years of Supreme Court precedent on the Mobile Sierra issue. As I said before, this was a doctrine created by the Supreme Court. There's extensive Supreme Court analysis on the purpose and scope of the doctrine, to whom it applies, under what circumstances it applies to. Two cases in the last 5 years, Morgan Stanley and NRG Power Marketing, it's fair to say that this is a fairly well-developed doctrine. These cases have been exclusively applied to contracts, which, as you say, we do not find here, and they have exclusively been applied to limit the role of the FERC. And FERC would have you believe that none of that precedent is limiting whatsoever, and that the doctrine formulated to constrain the FERC's discretion is in fact something that the FERC can turn around and use precisely the opposite. And that would
perhaps you can help me here, because this really is confusing. This has been sort of a moving target. In your view, I think your argument is that this public interest review is something different from just and reasonable review, right?
Yes, and that's a fair point, and this is something that's it is tough to chew around. Okay. The public interest presumption is far more restrictive.
That's all gone now, right?
The public interest presumption is and has always been far more restrictive. According to Potomac Electric Power, cited in our brief, it's practically insurmountable.
Okay,
Let me
I'm trying to figure this out. Morgan Stanley says public interest review is not a separate, stricter standard, but rather a method for applying just and reasonable review.
Yes.
Am I misunderstanding what they're saying?
It is what it means for a rate to be just and reasonable in the contract context, a context that does not exist here because there is no freely negotiated agreement among the parties. In a contract context, it is presumed, and a practically insurmountable presumption, that unless this contract seriously harms the public interest.
Isn't the ultimate question always whether it's just and reasonable?
Pardon?
Isn't the question whether it's just and reasonable? That's the question, right?
Yes, and in a contract.
As Judge Brown points out, the court has said that mobile SEER is just one way of measuring it. That's all.
It's a way of measuring it only in the context of a contract, and the reverse is also true.
And what court says that?
Morgan Stanley said what is just and the public interest standard of review is another measure of what is just and reasonable. Yeah. The same standard, but it only applies in the context of a contract.
In the context of contract, they've only been presented with it.
I think I added the word only.
Yeah,
that's
a pretty significant difference here. I mean, that's the gist of the whole.
It says what is just and reasonable in a contract context.
Right.
Okay, and I think the assumption is
what is there precluding FERC from deciding that it's just and reasonable in this context, in the auction context?
It has never been determined.
That's new. Is there something about our understanding of just and reasonable that precludes that makes it arbitrary and capricious? Or?
Considering that the public interest standard is practically insurmountable, if the FERC is allowed to provide its own different standard, separate from that has been provided by Congress, the ordinary just and reasonable standard, I think...
Morgan Stanley establishes that this is an iteration of just and reasonable. It's not different than just and reasonable. It's an iteration of it that in the past has been adapted to a particular field, right, bilateral contracts. And what I'm asking you, is there anything that precludes FERC from applying it to this field?
I would say the Federal Power Act does, because the Supreme Court has carved out a very specific exemption where, in the contract context, a public interest presumption, what it means for it to be just and reasonable rate, because it has been agreed to. In areas where there has been no freely negotiated agreement, no such presumption may apply. And I think if that is the 55 years of Supreme Court precedent on this, would be really meaningless if it applied in circumstances other than when there was a contract.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Robert Solomon for the Commission. At the outset, I'd like to make clear that the Commission agrees with most of the argument you just heard from the State Council, with the exception of the last 3 minutes. The Commission disagrees with everything the Generators Council argued in his allotted portion of the time.
You think, I know you didn't in your brief object to standing. Do you have any different views about that today for the generator?
Yes, I do have a view on that, and I agree with the concern raised by this panel as to any definitive concrete injury incurred by the generators here. Of course, here, while we disputed the generator's definition of Mobile Sierra contract rates, We ultimately did exercise our discretion to approve the settlement in its entirety, including the objectionable Section 4C concerning Mobile Sierra review. So as a practical matter, the generators have what they want. They have the Mobile Sierra public interest protection for the rates that result from the forward capacity market auction.
What about the argument that what's damaging them is the uncertainty FERC has created by not deciding the Mobile Sierra doctrine based on the proposition that Mobile Sierra is in fact required, not a question of FERC discretion?
There is no such damage. In fact, any uncertainty would come from the generators' interpretation of Mobile Sierra as recently interpreted by Morgan Stanley and NRG. What's important to realize here, and the reason why we have this confusion, which was recognized by Judge Silberman in the second Maine PUC case, is that there is a distinction between contracts and contract obligations in general, and Mobile Sierra contracts. The inquiry for this court is to determine whether the rates that result from the auction process are Mobile Sierra rates that result from good faith, arm's length, individualized negotiation. The Supreme Court defined Mobile Sierra rates for which the presumption of justness and reasonableness automatically attaches as those that arise from particularized arrangements, that arise from individualized negotiations. The Commission agrees that you can have contracts in general, or that you can have generalized contractual obligations, that of course can arise from an auction, that can arise from a settlement, can arise from a tariff. Indeed, their argument, the generator's argument, that all you need to do is look for some type of binding contractual obligation, we believe, would add to the confusion, not eliminate the confusion. Here, of course, once a buyer agrees to purchase capacity through the auction mechanism, it agrees, it is obligated to pay the market clearing price. To the extent suppliers bid into the market, agree to sell at the market clearing price, there is a contractual obligation of the buyer to buy, and there's a contractual obligation of the seller to sell. That is no different than any tariff case where a tariff sets out a particular rate or a particular formula or a particular market rule, and once the buyer accepts the tariff rate or formula or rule, commits to pay the tariff rate.
Can you tell me how you would define the kind of contract to which Mobile Sierra would apply?
Judge Brown, we want this court to apply the Supreme Court definition to distinguish between contracts in general and Mobile Sierra contracts. And the definition of a Mobile Sierra rate for which the presumption automatically attaches, even without initial prior commission review, is what the court said in Morgan Stanley, NRG, that you need good faith, arm's length, individualized negotiation between a willing buyer and a willing seller, equal bargaining strength, sophisticated parties. And what the commission found here in response to the first of the questions that was remanded by the Supreme Court and then subsequently this panel is you simply don't have the indicia of individualized negotiation in this forward capacity market of the type that resembles the bilateral individualized relationship between buyer and seller in Morgan Stanley.
Is it FERC's position then that in the auction context you would never have that just because of the way they're structured?
No, that is not the Commission's position, and in an auction context, while you have the intermediary, while you have the clearinghouse, it is possible that in an auction circumstance, you can still have bilateral negotiations between buyer and seller, with the auction house providing a necessary intermediary approach.
So what does it mean then to say that ISONE becomes the counterparty?
Well, the ISO New England is not yet the counterparty. Petitioner's counsel made reference to a future filing and a future case in which that issue will arise.
When that happens, would we then have the kind of bilateral contract obligation that you're trying to distinguish here, or would that, or would we still have the same problem?
I think we would still have the same problem. I think in that circumstance, regardless of whether the intermediary, the ISO, is an agent or a counterparty, regardless of the characterization of the intermediary, you still don't have the type of individualized negotiation between buyer and seller that you would have in a more conventional auction. What the commission found compelling here is that the buyer simply has no role whatsoever in this auction mechanism. The demand side of the equation is set by the independent system operator in advance. The only people who are negotiating, the only people who are actually participating in the auction, are the suppliers who are bidding for the right to serve the capacity needs of the entire New England region. Yes, the ISO is in the middle of this process, but the ISO is not acting as a particularized agent for any particular market participant. It's not acting as an agent for any particular supplier. It's not acting as an agent for any particular buyer. It is acting on behalf of what it believes best suits the reliability needs of the entire market. If individual customers want to opt out of the auction, if individual buyers do not want to pay the market clearing price, as generators explain in their brief, the auction process, the forward capacity market process, contemplates bilateral arrangements. The buyers do not have to buy at the market clearing price. The buyers can opt out by engaging in a bilateral supply arrangement with a particular seller. That would probably be a Mobile Sierra contract. That would probably be the type of circumstance in which the rates can be presumed to be just and reasonable. Turning to the discretion issue, I agree with your honors that we need to apply the Morgan Stanley NRG definition of what is just and reasonable. Public interest is not a separate and distinct extra statutory concept. Rather, that is just simply a more rigorous, a more stringent application of the one and only just and reasonable standard.
So the state commissions, their position is that that given FERC's, given the commission's conclusion that these are not bilateral arm's length negotiated contracts, that ends the matter, right? You can't apply Mobile Sierra, right? That's their argument.
Yes, their argument.
You understand them to be taking the next step and saying, well, if they're wrong about that, FERC abused discretion by...
No, the states do not.
They don't argue that. Okay.
Right. Correct. The states do not make that argument, nor do I see how they could make that argument that there's somehow abuse of discretion here. I do want to point out that the commission does not have any particular fondness for this particular provision in the settlement, to the extent it ties the commission's hands as to later review of any rates that emerge from the auction process. As counsel pointed out, we have consistently rejected such a provision where we have discretion to do so. What I do want to point out here is we really like this particular settlement, the forward capacity market settlement, and I think you can find the reasons in all of the decisions this court has issued concerning the reliability problems, the capacity problems, the under compensation problems that the market in New England has suffered in the last 10 years.
We're hearing now that there are problems attracting new investors. It's not working as you claim.
Well, that is the reason why the Commission exercised its discretion here in this particular case. The auction process is forward-looking. The parties commit to capacity supply 3 years in advance.
The allegation is investors are not coming to this the way they otherwise would be because they don't have this ironclad guarantee that it's going to get Mobile Sierra protection for the rates that emerge from the auction.
Well, that's why the Commission exercised its discretion here, because the Commission found that in these circumstances in particular, stability is a particularly important goal when the whole idea behind the auction is not just simply to compensate existing generators, but to bring additional generators into the market to increase market entry. And given that it takes 3 years for a new entrant to be able to make capacity sales, that new entrant has to secure financing and has to secure necessary regulatory approvals and has to construct. In that particular circumstance, the Commission found that it was particularly appropriate in its discretion to apply the just and reasonable standard. The Commission said that as a matter of discretion, it will do so only in the most compelling circumstances. The Commission found the history of development of the forward capacity market to be such a compelling circumstance. The Commission, contrary to Mr. Shepard's comments, is not antagonistic to contracts. We are not trying to destroy or destabilize the Mobile Sierra doctrine, as Justice Scalia found in the Morgan Stanley case. Contracts are particularly valuable as a hedge against market volatility. Was particularly attractive to the Commission during the California energy crisis of 12 years ago when we were trying to lure the parties away from the incredibly volatile spot market to contracts. The Commission has no problem giving true Mobile Sierra contracts the respect that they deserve. But since a presumption is automatically imposed on the Commission when there truly is a Mobile Sierra contract, we want to make sure that this court applies the Morgan Stanley test for individualized, particularized negotiations that produce Mobile Sierra rates. If nothing further, thank you.
Did counsel have any more time left?
Neither.
Okay, thanks. You can each take 2 minutes if you like it. You don't have to. But.
Thank you very much. I wanted to get back, and obviously we agree with the Commission that these are auction rates. The auction rates are tariffs, not contracts, to which the Mobile Sierra doctrine would naturally apply. But going back to whether FERC has the discretion to do so, this is not a Mobile Sierra presumption. Whatever it is, it's something different. It is a different doctrine than that has been carved out by the Supreme Court, that the Commission would have the authority to impose a presumption that applies in a contract context to a presumption that also can apply in a tariff context. And we believe that is an evisceration of the distinction between a tariff of the and contract that forms the basis of the Mobile Sierra presumption. To the extent that This is entirely, we think, untethered from the Mobile Sierra Doctrine and ought to be given perhaps a new name. But what FERC is saying is that in the totality of the circumstances, it's going to apply a more strict standard of review because it thinks it's just and reasonable to do that. And that is what I think is the form of a logical argument, but it is not a logical argument. FERC is required to use, upon complaint, the ordinary just and reasonable standard. That is the standard by which FERC, it's not the standard by which FERC decides what standard to use, the practically insurmountable public interest standard or the ordinary just and reasonable standard. And we think that's nothing short of rewriting the Federal Power Act and applying which standard the FERC thinks is appropriate. It does not have a discretion to apply a standard that is different from that provided by Congress.
Okay. Your time is up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you want to use your 2 minutes? Or?
Thank you, Your Honor, for this opportunity. First, let's turn quickly to the question of standing. I believe that you understand our point about the fact there is concrete injury going on in the market right
well, no,
now.
No, don't assume that. I still don't understand it. But do you want to say something about
I believe
more
you
about
understand what we've articulated, whether or not you're persuaded.
I heard you.
Separate point. The let me raise a different issue, which is that we thought we had a win. The orders below, the ones that were led to MPUC1, denied IACG's argument, the one that's being raised here. I can refer you to the specific pages of the orders that are set forth in the last argument of our brief. They begin, we deny IACG's argument that Mobile Sierra does not apply to these sorts of provisions. And FERC goes on at length to describe why that's the case in the FCM settlement order and cite a great number of decisions which we rely on as a way of doing business going forward. This decision here in the remand order deprives us of that previous victory. The second point that I would like to make is that to the extent that there is some confusion about this court's jurisdiction or doubt about this court's jurisdiction on remand, we raised the issue in the first remand that became MPUC2 to Judge Silverman that this is the argument we were discussing now was only raised by an intervener, never by a petitioner, and the court never had jurisdiction to raise it. His response to that in his order in MPUC2 was, well, maybe so, but the Supreme Court just remanded the question, and therefore I'm going to address it. So we have a similar sort of situation here. Next, it looks as if you are going to be addressing or need to address the contract question by way of marching through to the question raised by the second question about discretion. And we will take sloppy seconds if that is what was required, so long as we get the answer that we're looking for.
All right, great. Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor.
We'll call the next case, please.